It is 25 minutes after the hour on a transcendent Tuesday, and we're back with Dr. Don Clark. Don, we haven't seen you in a coon's age. Now, I don't know how long raccoons live, but it's been at least that long, I think, since we've talked with you. How are things?
They live quite a while, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not a naturalist, yep. And you're the guy in touch with all the seasons and the land and the weather cycles and science generally. Don is a member of the board of Creation Moments. He's a biochemist by trade. Well, not by trade anymore, but he does it. He does his biochemistry stuff, making wines at Valle della Pace in Garden Valley, Texas, which is just about 80, 90 miles east of the Dallas area. And a beautiful place. And he joins us there. David Allen Pond is here, too, from East Dakota. And, Don, we have a full table of discussion topics today. And I want to talk first about... Now, I'm not sure that the nuclear physics is your wheelhouse, okay?
But now, before we get to that...
Oh.
Yep.
Before we get to that,
mm-hmm.
Raccoons can live up to 15 years.
50?
But most of them, 15.
Well, 15, okay.
But most of them die between 2 and 3.
Well, see? Well,
oh, gee, what is...
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Well, thank you. Now Daniel, when I use that phrase...
looking for his raccoon cap, I guess.
I think so.
50% of raccoons die under the age of 1.
Okay. I wonder how they know
predators
that.
Predators and disease.
Yeah. There's a dead raccoon. How old is he? Well, okay. mark him down as a year, okay? There's a big announcement coming today from the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. In fact, the Secretary of Energy is going to be there to make the announcement. And it has to do with an experiment in which they did a atomic fusion, and the experiment created more energy than it used. Now, this is kind of over my head. And I'm not sure whether I should jump up and down and yell and applaud and say, Yahoo, at last, we've done that. Or should I close my windows and hunker down for a large explosion to come? What does this mean to us?
I'm sure this was done on a very small scale, so we're not talking about, you know. Well, let's talk about fusion in the first place versus fission. All of the nuclear reactors that we have on stream, and they're disappearing right and left if the environmentalists have their way.
Nuclear power plants, yeah.
Cleanest form of energy that we could have. Fission, of course, you're splitting atoms, and uranium is a big one. Uranium's a big atom, so you shoot neutrons at it, and the neutrons then split the uranium into various components, and the splitting of the atom creates energy, which we use in the form of heat, and the heat then turns heats up water, which then turns water turbines, steam turbines, which generate the electricity. And so we're not getting electricity directly from nuclear energy. We're taking the heat that is generated from the reaction and using that to create the electricity to, like I said, heat up water, then...
Now, is that supposedly efficient? So it does it take more energy to create that heat, or is it, you know, is there something inefficient about fission?
Fission reactions. You just need the nuclear material itself. And uranium, I think it's 238, is naturally unstable, so it's degrading anyway. And so it gives off neutrons, and so it kind of ignites itself, if you will. It kind of causes the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So you have control rods in that case, which kind of dampen neutrons.
It's a chain reaction, right? So it just kind of...
It's a chain. It can be a chain reaction, and so... It dampens the number of neutrons, which then tones down the amount of energy that's being released.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how many control rods you have in the system, and all of this has been worked out years and years ago.
That's fission, yeah.
So that's fishing. That's that was the easy part. Easy from the point of view, all you need to do is, you know, concentrate the uranium and get your nuclear material, and away you go. Now, the fusion, on the other hand, is the type of reaction that happens in the sun. So the sun takes hydrogen and makes deuterium out of it. So that's and then from the deuterium you can make tritium, and deuterium tritium is radioactive. Deuterium is actually relatively stable, and so but the problem is you've got to really concentrate your hydrogen atoms, and you need to put in a lot of energy into the system before you get any energy out. So instead of splitting an atom, splitting an atom, we're actually fusing, in this case, two hydrogens together. And they didn't say in this article, but they probably used either deuterium and hydrogen, or you know, something along those lines, a little bit heavier than just pure hydrogen. Concentrated it, and probably used lasers or something to excite the atoms and have them collide against each other. And you have to have them collide with enough force that they actually fuse together, because you got the strong nuclear forces, and that's what's producing the energy. So you around the nucleus of the hydrogen atom, for example, are these strong nuclear forces that are repelling, because, you know, hydrogen's positive and so positively charged, and so you're they want to repel from each other, but in this type of reaction you're actually forcing them together, so they actually fuse into deuterium, which is one proton and one neutron. And tritium, which is one proton and two neutrons. So neutrons, of course, are neutral, as the name implies, and a proton is positively charged. And so they create the conditions in some type of reactor in order to force these atoms together and collide with each other with enough force to overcome the repulsive forces that are in the nucleus to begin with. And when they fuse, they release a tremendous amount of energy. So
okay, now are you talking about heat or some other kind of energy? Because fission produces heat, which produces steam, which produces electricity. Fusion produces what kind of energy?
It will produce heat as well.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's like a big bang. I mean, you know, we get a lot of heat from the sun. Well, there's a lot of fusion reactions going on in the sun. And so there is, you know, it's going to last a while. It's not burning out anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting. In astronomy, we have seen some suns actually burn out in you know, way out in space, and the Crab Nebula, for example, is one example of a exploding star that then created this beautiful images that we see way out in space. But the sun is you know, nowhere near that stage. A sun that's ready to a star that's ready to do that type of thing, for example, will first collapse on itself and then create a tremendous amount of energy, and the light produced is different from our yellowish orange type of light that we get from the sun.
Apparently this is a really big deal. They've been trying to do this since the 1950s and couldn't achieve it until now. That is, having a fusion reaction that produces more energy than it takes to create, which means there's a net plus, a net gain in energy. In fact, one of the claims in the article, just to give you an example of this, this can be used to produce energy. And if you had like a cup full of this energy, whether it's hydrogen or what, I'm not sure, but it could power your car for years. So the potential for producing electricity supersedes windmills and solar and all these other iffy things, and gives us apparently a new technology that within some number of years they can develop and they can produce it to scale and we can start to make use of this stuff. But it still makes me nervous. I'm picturing a little sun in this laboratory starting to expand on its own. And where do we go from there?
Well, exactly. But, it's controlled, and I'm sure it's controlled by the energy is controlled fields.
Let me make the point a little differently. You know what kind of weapons have been developed from the fission process enough to wipe out the Earth? If this is more efficient, somebody's going to turn it into a weapon.
Well, that may be possible. Of course, it depends. It's highly dependent on the concentration of hydrogen that you have, and so unlike a chain reaction that takes place with the fission reaction. You're not going to have a whole concentration of hydrogen in the atmosphere to continue the reaction to cause, major damage, I wouldn't think. But you could, concentrate it, I would suppose, in a container of some sort, and then that would be your source of the energy. And it doesn't take a whole lot. Now, let me just say, one thing about this particular article and about this, end quote, great discovery, is that they haven't finished their calculations.
Hmm.
So they think it produced more energy than they put in, but they haven't finished their analysis. So is this a premature announcement? Because, people are going to jump up and down. Oh, fusion reactors now, for one thing. So the scientists back at the Lawrence Livermore laboratories haven't finished their calculations to make sure that yes, indeed, we did produce the critical amount of energy that we needed out of this particular type of reaction that we put together. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, coming from, even if they did, and they can repeat it multiple times, this has to be scaled up. And so what you do in a laboratory to what you're going to do in a fusion reactor that you need to generate megawatts or gigawatts of electricity out of, are two different things. So we're talking about probably 20 years away, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe if everything worked according to... plans, it might be 10 years, but the planning process on these things and then scaling it into a workable system is going to be quite a number of years away.
Yeah, David?
You mean they haven't done it twice? They haven't repeated the experiment yet?
That's what it sounds like from the article. Wow. I mean, this is just, hey, we did this. We've been trying for 30 or 40 years, and we finally got something that looks promising, and everybody runs wild with it. So now you're having this big meeting, and, I can just imagine, Biden's going to take the credit for, look what we've done. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do a darn thing, but these guys have been working on this, for a very long time.
There's grants to be had, grant money out there. Yeah.
I remember a scam, a fusion energy scam. It's probably in the 70s now, and I tried to look for a search engine, but I couldn't find anything. But I remember seeing a fusion or a picture of a fusion experiment on Newsweek magazine, and I'm that image is as clear as you are. I'm seeing this image, and they announced the same kind of breakthrough. And then found that they couldn't repeat the experiment.
Oh.
That they couldn't duplicate it.
Right.
And so,
Yeah.
This has happened before.
It's happened before, and we, you know, they could very well, you know, come back and say, hey, yes, we did produce more energy, and look, we tried it a week later, and we got the same results, so it looks like we've got a stable system that we can, you know, create this process, which would be, you know, would be great, because it will produce a relatively clean energy, you know, from this, if it doesn't get, here we go again with nuclear, you know, nuclear energy, and we're going to contaminate the whole Earth.
Well, they say nuclear waste is minimal with this. Maybe not negligent, but not like fission. So
you take hydrogen and you create deuterium, or hydrogen and deuterium and you create tritium. And tritium is radioactive, so you got to do something with that. But the amount of energy that you can get out of the system is far exceeds when you split a atom, for example, you get X amount of energy out of it, right? Depending on the type of atom it is. But when you fuse atoms together, the energy is multiple times more energy out of that type of reaction than the fission reactions. So the potential is great, and that's why they've spent over the, well, since the 1950s, billions of dollars trying to, achieve what they apparently achieved, you know, this week at the Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. And so, you know, hopefully this is something that can be repeated. Hopefully they did get more energy out of the system. And, you know, how much is it going to cost to really, you know, commercialize something like this is anyone's guess, of course, at this stage, because you've got to, like I said, you've got to scale all this up and repeat it. And is this the best way of doing this type of reaction, or did they, you know, is this works great in the laboratory, but not so much when you try to scale
it up? Well, let me pose another question here, because we've talked about science in general terms many times over the past years. And we've come to question the veracity of those who report on science. Not so much we distrust the data, but the interpretation of the data. So in something like fusion, where there's so many dollars and so much pressure, so much potential for fame and fortune, is this going to go the same route as COVID vaccines? And they're now, and I'm comparing the medical world now with nuclear fusion. Maybe that's not valid, but the data is one thing, but the interpretation of the data is something else again.
Well, that's why other scientists have to look at the results. That if you're truly doing a scientific research, you ultimately publish a paper on your findings and what you've done. And it's peer reviewed, supposedly, and you know, you don't get your buddies to review it. You get somebody you don't know from around the world to review it and say, yeah, this looks like they've achieved what they said they did. And that helps to take out some of the bias. Now, in the medical field, that's gone by the wayside, because the pharmaceutical companies now own the FDA, or are in bed with the FDA, and the FDA is in bed with the pharmaceutical companies. And so when you've got big drugs on the horizon, it takes a lot of money to do the clinical research. And of course, the pharmaceutical companies aren't too keen to throw the drug away because of something that happened in a clinical trial. So, we're talking about two different processes, and we'll see. You know, time will tell. But even so, we're still, like I said, multiple years away from actually commercializing this type of technology into a usable system that we can get essentially almost unlimited amount of energy, but a lot of energy out of the system. And it shouldn't be that big of you know, of a system. But, you know, time will tell. We'll see.
So somehow this is different than, say, coal, where you have to shovel tons of coal into a furnace in order to produce heat, to produce electricity. This is nuclear power, so it takes very little to get an equivalent amount of power out of it. I guess that's the essence of this, huh?
Well, yes, and from the point of view of, like I said, even fission reactions are much, much smaller than burning coal. I mean, you're talking about, you know, very tiny.
In terms of
actually
input,
one of these reactors, you would be amazed at how small the reactor actually is. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the multitude of times smaller than that to produce the same amount of energy. So is it, you know, I think it's like a factor of 1,000, but don't hold me to that. Fusion reactions probably produce on the order, like I said, of maybe 1,000 more than the fission reactions, maybe even a lot more. I don't remember from my years and years ago when I was studying these types of things. But at any rate, you know, this is not going to be a very big reactor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may take a big system to contain the energy, you know, with the and I'm sure they're doing it with a magnetic field around the whole thing to control the plasma that they generate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of an area where you know, some of the things that you've seen in science fiction may be not too far from the actual truth with regard to some of this. So. You know, I'm sure they're not using dilithium crystals as they did on the Starship Enterprise.
Oh,
but
okay.
Like I'm saying, you know, it's a hydrogen reaction that they're fusing together to form either deuterium or tritium.
So
Doc Brown used table scraps in Back to the Future to run his machine.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I mean,
well, that's.
That would be even better.
It would be.
What role does hydrogen have in this process?
Well, it's the fuel, basically.
That drives the reaction.
You know, yeah, the simplest reaction you can have is collide two hydrogen atoms together with enough force and energy to cause them to fuse.
And we have lots of hydrogen.
Or collided into some neutrons, mm-hmm. To produce the, like I said, deuterium. And so we have plenty of hydrogen around. And the more I think about this, they probably did hydrogen and deuterium type of reaction, where they're bombarding hydrogen into deuterium, which would then give you tritium. Like I said, there's not enough information.
So time to invest in hydrogen then? David, take note here. We may have to buy stock in hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? So, I think
Bitcoin is no longer cool to own. So hydrogen,
yeah,
would be a good thing to buy.
well, a little premature, perhaps.
Okay. Well, the story of my life. Yeah. Okay.
I'm looking at an article in a magazine or a website called Eurofusion, and they talk about a plant that's built in Cataroche, southern France, that will have powerful fusion reactions for 5 to 10 minutes. And, you know, it's an incredibly short article, and there's not much else to it.
Okay.
But I mean, at least somebody else is talking about it.
Okay. Well, Don, I'm searching frantically here, mentally, for a transition into ivermectin. You did mention the FDA a while ago. and the FDA now has come out with a statement that ivermectin doesn't work against COVID. And yet, according to this article from the Institute for Creation Research, half the studies they quote say that ivermectin will work on COVID. What's the scoop?
Well, the scoop is how you design your clinical studies, if you even designed a clinical study, or if you're just looking retrospectively at the data, and you know, and how you're using the drug. The bottom line in all of this is, so I mean, half of the studies in the FDA's report show that ivermectin does work. So they've got half the studies that show it does work. They've got half the studies that show it doesn't look like there's any potential to the to the drug. And then when you drill down into the research that was done, it's ivermectin is effective as a preventative, and if used early. If you use ivermectin, you know, 3 or 4 days, 5 days into your COVID experience or infection, it's really a little too late, because the virus has already run its course, and you're trying to now treat the symptoms as opposed to actually treating the virus and preventing the virus from entering into the cells. So ivermectin does a couple of things. Ivermectin, and this is known, has been known about ivermectin for a long time, that it actually binds to the virus itself, and it also prevents or helps to prevent the virus from getting into your cell. And it's it needs zinc is very important in the whole process as well. So if you do a clinical study and you're not giving your patient zinc along with the ivermectin, that doesn't mean a whole lot to me, because the cofactor in all of this, of course, is zinc. And so, but a lot of these studies are these the ones that the FDA chose to focus on instead of separating out the mechanism of actions here, are those that they gave ivermectin later in the infection rather than earlier. Probably last year, an Indian study, Indian studies came out, and other studies came out to show that, gee, if you take a little bit of ivermectin each week, and or let's say once every 4 days, that helped prevent you from getting an infection. So if we're worried in this flu season about people getting COVID, we should be prescribing low doses of ivermectin, because it has been shown clinically with you know, controlled studies that it is a very good preventative for you getting infections. And it's a preventative because of the mechanism of action. It binds to the virus, it isolates the virus, and then your body can eliminate the virus, and it also prevents it from getting into the cells. If a virus can't get into the cell that it's supposed to infect, guess what? It can't multiply, so therefore you don't experience the disease, the effects of the disease.
So we should all have ivermectin tablets as a preventative for COVID. And yet that's not happening because the FDA, fill in the blank. What's their motivation here?
Well, the motivation is the drugs. The vaccine, they're still pushing the vaccine. I mean, I had a physical at my finally got a physical at my it wasn't, you know, my family practitioner at a local clinic, and they're pushing. I mean, he has to push the vaccines. They have to ask every patient, have you had your COVID vaccine, and do you want your COVID vaccine? Now, he's so in the system, the medical system, they're still pushing the vaccine, which has now been proven over the long haul not only not to be effective, but also can cause some major problems for people.
Was it not effective to begin with, because there were all those people dying, all those hospitalizations, and then the vaccines hit, and all of a sudden the numbers went down? when you say it's ineffective, is it no longer effective because of variations, mutants, and mutations in the virus? So that, or was it no good to begin with?
Well, it was type of research that was rushed it's not the market because it's still under emergency use authorization. And so it was premature to actually putting this on in people.
Mm-hmm. Nobody has to pay for this. Nobody has to pay for the vaccine, right? The government is funding all that.
The government is funding, but we're pumping billions of dollars into the pharmaceutical companies, mm-hmm. Pfizer and Moderna, yeah. which mm-hmm. happens to be, Fauci's wrapped up in that as well as Gates. And so you got all these things, and they're making billions and billions of dollars because people, the governments said you have to take this vaccine, and it's really not a vaccine. That's the other thing which we've talked about before.
Yeah, it doesn't meet the definition. It doesn't meet the definition of vaccine. Yeah.
Yes, and so I wouldn't give up just because the FDA says, "Oh, the vaccine, the ivermectin doesn't work." I wouldn't give up on ivermectin, and if I felt like I was coming down with flu-like symptoms, I would take it immediately and start taking it for 3 or 4 days, and to see, if you can mitigate some of these symptoms.
But you would have to ask for it, would you not?
You would have to ask for it. Mm. Yes.
Okay. Mm. Well. Mm. Fusion reactions and ivermectin and the FDA and Big Pharma, and we've covered a lot of ground today on Broken Road Radio with Dr. Don Clark. I want to mention creationmoments.com. That's the website. Don is a member of the board there, and at Creation Moments, they've got volumes and volumes of scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. I think you'll find it a fascinating website. Lots of things about animals and nature and experimentations, and it's of a scientific bent. Creationmoments.com. Why don't you pay them a visit and see what they've got for you there. Don, it's good to be back and see you again, and we'll look forward to next week. Okay?
All right. Very good. Good to have you back. I mean, you guys are traveling around the world here.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Yeah. Somehow we found our way back, and here we are.
Yes.
Good to see you, Don.
Thanks, Don. Bye-bye.
Right. So long.